Good morning. My name is Lisa, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the NBPE Investor Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Buser, you may begin your conference.
Thank you very much. And thanks, everybody, for joining us this morning. This is John Buser. I'm here with Paul Daggett for our quarterly investor update for NB Private Equity Partners. For those of you who don't have the presentation materials, they can be obtained on our website, nbprivateequitypartners.com. So starting on page two of the presentation, goes at a high level about NBPE. Our objective is to create capital appreciation and current income in the private equity space for our shareholders. We invest directly into private equity-backed companies. Currently, our portfolio is roughly 80% direct investments either in equity or debt positions of these companies, and 20% is a legacy portfolio in funds that continues to wind off. We implement our strategy through the sourcing and diligence capabilities of Neuberger Berman's $35 billion private equity platform, and we believe we introduce excellent fee efficiency for our clients through the lower end cost to our investors by having a single layer of fees at the NBPE level because of our ability to invest directly into portfolio company equity and portfolio company debt positions. Moving on to page three, a little bit about the Neuberger Berman investment platform. We have 55 senior investment professionals out of our over 100 investment professionals. Those 55 senior investment professionals average 21 years of experience. We're opportunistic investors because we invest across the capital structure, and we invest in new transactions and into existing portfolio companies alongside leading private equity firms. We utilize the strong information and additional resources that Neuberger Berman, being a global investment manager, provides to us. We're a large platform in private equity, doing approximately $3 billion of new investments across the entire platform, and we have over 400 active relationships with private equity funds. Going on to page four, a few of the key performance highlights for the year. During the year, there's been and this is during 2016, and by the way, all the data is through July 31st of 2016, unless otherwise noted in this presentation. So the performance during 2016, we've had an increase in our NAV per share of 4.1% and a share price total return of 3%. Going to the lower left part of that page, a lot of cash activity during the year. $161.3 million has come back from our investments during the year. That represents 19.8% of our starting private equity positions at the start of the year. So a very active, volatile portfolio. 92.3 has been funded into new investments, and we've paid and declared dividends of $24.4 million with the payment of our second semiannual dividend being tomorrow. Upper right, we continue, as we always have, to have a very strong capital position where our amount of unfunded commitments is very small relative to our ability to cover those commitments. So you see a 332% adjusted commitment coverage ratio. And we'll talk later about a new occurrence in our capital structure at the end of this presentation. And finally, as I mentioned, we're paying a dividend tomorrow. We have 93% dividend coverage through a yield from income investments currently, and it represents a 4.8% annualized dividend yield on the share price, 3.5% dividend yield on NAV. So I'm going to turn it over to Paul, who's going to go through some of the financial information and investing activity during the last quarter.
Great. Thank you, John. So beginning on page five with the more detailed NAV update and the summary balance sheet, you can see at the very bottom of the page the performance increase during the year that John mentioned with a 4.1% NAV per share total return, taking us from 1435 of NAV at the beginning of the year through to 1493 as of today, including those two dividends, one of which has been paid, one of which is being paid tomorrow. Importantly, you'll see that although the fund investments and direct investments in aggregate have decreased during the year by about $30 million, overall, we have seen those value increases being driven by the strong performance of the companies within the portfolio. You'll also note that if you look as of July 31st, the net cash and credit facility takes you to $9 million approximately positive of cash, which leaves a significant amount of capacity for new investments as and when we see the deal flow we choose to invest in. And as a reminder, the credit facility as a whole is $150 million. So as I mentioned, we have significant capacity to invest through that credit facility should we choose to do that. Moving on to page six and looking at the net asset value per share development, a chart that we always show, and beginning at the beginning of the year at 14.35, as I mentioned, we saw either realized or unrealized appreciation in the portfolio, giving us 57 cents per share of gains, yield income and dividends mostly from that income portfolio of 44 cents, and that was offset by some financing costs, management fees, and then most notably, you'll see the 50 cents per share dividend, taking us to that 14.43 at the end of July. And we'll dig into some of those numbers as we go through this presentation. But on slide seven, again, a chart we always show, which just gives you some perspective on the relative flows in terms of contributions and distributions from investments. This looks back over a full year so that you can compare the flows this year to the same period last year. And just to do that, if you look at the Q1 and Q2, which are the two far right sets of columns, and obviously on the far left, you see the Q1 and Q2 of 2015, we are seeing slightly increased distributions relative to where we were last year, and slightly less on the contribution side. And again, that obviously explains the decrease we've seen in the level of investment so far this year. As we talk through the equity and the debt investments, I'll explain why that is. But we are seeing very strong deal flow on both sides, but we're also choosing to be very selective as to the investments we're completing. Page 8 looks at the diversification in four different ways. In the top left, the message is that we are exactly where we want to be in terms of the mix between equity and income. So it's about one-third income, and taking the funds in aggregate as mostly equity, about two-thirds of the portfolio is in equity investments today. And as John mentioned, that fund piece has been winding down at a very steady pace, producing cash back that we've been reinvesting into direct investments, and we expect that to continue over the coming months and years. In terms of geography, we are still North American heavy. That really reflects where we are seeing the best investments at any given time. And as we really pick our investments more on a bottom-up basis than top-down generally, you can see that we just have been over time seeing better opportunities, and we're very happy with those decisions that we've made, both on a micro and a macro basis. In terms of industry, technology I'll talk about a little bit more. It is the largest exposure, and that's a reflection of its exposure both within the equity and the income portfolios. But it is actually a lot more diverse than just looking at 23% technology might imply. Nevertheless, that's the largest sector. And other large sectors continue to be healthcare, consumer discretionary, financial services, and industrials. And then finally, in terms of vintage year, I think one notable point here is that 60% of the portfolio has been invested in 2014 or later. And that reflects both the good liquidity that we've had from those earlier years. Really, most of the net asset value that we have in those earlier years of 2006, 7, 8, 9 is really in the legacy fund investments, which are winding down. And then we've been reinvesting into 2014, 15, and 16. And this is an important point that I'll bring out a little bit later when it comes to the performance and ongoing development of our portfolio. Moving now to the two main types of investments in the portfolio, the direct equity and direct income investments. On page 9, we have some summary statistics around the equity investment portfolio. These are direct equity investments alongside leading private equity sponsors, in almost all cases, with only our fees on these. So these are not double error fees, and that is one of the notable advantages of investing in MBPE, that you're not investing into a double layer of fees. Today, there are 77 equity co-investments with about $370 million of fair value. Looking at the valuation statistics in the top right, you can see that of the companies that are valued based on EBITDA multiples, some are based on other metrics, but of those based on EBITDA multiples, we have an average of 10.6 times, which favorably compares to the Russell Index, which is at 20.4 times EBITDA as of the same date. So, you know, we think it's a very strong portfolio that we've actually accessed and are holding at reasonable valuations for companies of this profile. And the profile is two blocks below in growth. We saw 4% LTM revenue growth, 7% LTM EBITDA growth. So we are seeing good growth in these companies as sponsors execute on their underlying investment plans. We have seen good liquidity so far this year, with six exits generating 2.3 times money on average. And we'll look a little bit more at some of the valuation metrics on future pages. Just one other note to make is that the public portfolio has decreased slightly during the year. That is not because of valuation decreases. It's actually because we divested the largest position towards the beginning of the year, which was in Sabre. That was at the time the biggest overall position in MBPE. So today it's 7% in publics. And one other notable point around publics is that during July, one of our mid-cap equity co-investments, a company called Patheon, went public and has been trading in the public market since the middle of July. Moving on to 10, and I mentioned the importance of that relatively young portfolio. So I think we've seen solid development in the portfolio and in the NAV of the overall vehicle so far this year. But one thing to note is if you look at the chart on the right, 2016, 2015, and 2014, the gross multiples by these vintage years is very close to one because these are young investments that typically take some time until you see the valuation increases come through as the private equity sponsors execute on their plans. Those 3 years represent about 60% of the total value of the equity investment portfolio. So again, the point I'm making here is that we have been replacing investments as they've been realized. And we have actually got quite a bit of weight in these investments held at or near cost, as you can see in the pie chart on the left. So what that means is that we feel very good about the investments we've been making in the last 2.5 years. We think they will produce valuation increases as they mature, and due to the large weight that we have in those, we are hopeful that will drive future valuation increases in the coming years. Moving on to 11, and this is really another way to look at our valuations, and we have two different charts. The chart on the left looks at full exits only, and so that is at the point where we complete the final divestiture of any securities in a company, we then look back on the results of that company. So not all of that will have been realized in any given year. There may have been a recap or partial sale in some earlier years, but we give it all credit in the given bars. So here we see that over the last 3 years, we actually have seen an increase in the multiple that we've seen on exit. But really importantly, so far this year, those six exits I mentioned drove $70 million of proceeds at a 2.3 times average multiple. So we're pleased with that. On the right, we have a slightly different set of data. The reason is that we wanted to include IPOs and partial exits since they give valuation marks. And this looks at where the companies were held 3 quarters, 2 quarters, and 1 quarter prior to those exits or valuation events to give an idea of the of how good the valuations were and how accurate they are overall. And you can see that 3 quarters prior to any of these exit events, they were actually held, these companies on average, at 19% below where they were actually exited. Obviously, as the exit gets closer, the sponsor is beginning to price that in. But again, I think it gives you an idea of how private equity valuations can work in that there usually is a discount a long way out from exit relative to where exits occur. Looking at 12, we give a summary of the 10 equity co-investments we've made so far this year. And this is a very diverse set of investments. We actually have 10 different sponsors, if you include KKR and KKR Europe as different sponsors, 9, obviously, if you view those as the same sponsor. There's 5 different sectors within this, 4 large-cap deals, 3 mid-cap deals, 3 growth equity deals. And then we've actually got a larger amount of diversity than you've seen in those earlier pie charts in terms of geography, with 3 European investments, 1 Asian investment, 1 in Canada, and then 5 in the U.S. So I think we're seeing very diverse deal flow. It gives you an idea of how broad our platform is in terms of sponsors, sector, and geography. And the one point I wanted to make is that I mentioned technology is a broad sector. And so when you talk about a large concentration in our portfolio in technology, very often you're looking at very different end markets within that technology, as well as different sizes and different types of technology. And to illustrate that, I thought I would just mention in a few words in the 4 technology companies we have here, what they do and why they're different to each other. So number 2 here is SolarWinds. That is a $4.5 billion company, which was a take private alongside Thoma Bravo. This is a large enterprise IT and infrastructure management software business. So it's software that's used by IT departments to help them manage their network and the underlying software that they use. So a very large, stable platform, which is broadly used, particularly in the U.S., but also globally, a larger deal. And, you know, that is one where very much it squarely sits in the IT/software category. As we move down, you'll see some of these are different. The company that says engineering is an Italian software business. Again, it's one of the largest businesses in Italy in the IT space. It's really a systems integration and outsourcing business. So it's really it's allowing smaller Italian businesses and middle-sized Italian businesses to outsource their systems integration and software and IT services. So again, this is obviously more of a country-specific and very much an outsourcing type of business. That's alongside NB Renaissance, which is part of our private equity business based in Milan and Apex. 2 others to cover, Solace number 5. This is a growth investment alongside Bridge Growth. It's an infrastructure messaging business, which is a part of the middleware. It essentially allows different systems to talk to each other in a very rapid sense. Is used by people who have a need for very accurate and very quick communications in their systems. But it's a smaller business that Bridge Growth made an investment in, and we invested alongside, and has a very fast growth profile, we hope, and certainly has historically. And then finally, Snagajob is the U.S.'s largest marketplace for hourly workers. This is number 9 on the list. This is alongside New Spring Capital. This is focused on hourly workers, so it allows hourly workers to look for jobs. And then from the business's perspective, this is really a recruitment, onboarding, and personnel management software tool. So you can look at it both as a consumer play as well as an enterprise play. And again, this is a much faster growing growth capital investment in a smaller U.S. business. So again, I think it gives you an idea that we do everything within IT from large enterprise platforms through to smaller growth investments, both on the enterprise and the consumer side, with very different end markets, very different growth profiles, very different leverage profiles. And that's one of the reasons that you do see a reasonable size concentration in the technology sector in our portfolio as a whole. So switching to the income side of the portfolio, our goal with the income portfolio is to produce income to support the dividend. Very often we do get equity investments or warrants alongside these to produce some capital appreciation as well. You can see that we do have a very strong cash yield on the portfolio of 9.7%, with a total 10.5% estimated yield to maturity on the $250 million portfolio in this space. Today, this supports 93% of our dividend, so it has come down somewhat during the year. We've seen extremely strong liquidity in this portfolio, and really one of our challenges here has been to continue to invest at the pace that we've seen realizations over the last 2 years. As we've always said, we are not going to make investments just to get to that 100%. So where we don't see opportunities we like, we will pass, and eventually we will rebuild that portfolio to 100%. But over time, that could decrease more before we get back to where we want to be. Again, some key statistics on this. Overall, there's 5.3 times leverage within these portfolios, and 3.9 times of that is senior to the position that we're in. So once again, we look at this as, on a risk-adjusted basis, a very attractive way to get into private equity-backed companies in securities that are senior to the equity with very reasonable amounts of securities that are senior to the positions that we're in. Also, just to note that this is mostly a U.S. portfolio, and 88% of it is in floating rate debt. So should U.S. interest rates increase in the coming months, as they are speculated to, ultimately, once we're past the LIBOR floors that exist in some of these investments, we are in variable rate securities. On page 14, we have been showing you this slide for several quarters now. And again, it just gives you an idea of the types of credits that we have within the portfolio. They typically are in companies which are asset light, and the point we're making there is that there is a reasonably low amount of CapEx within these portfolios. So these are strong cash flowing businesses in market leading positions with, as you can see, large equity cushions and EBITDA margins in the business. And the most important statistic is at the bottom of the page, that 100% of the investments in our income portfolio are performing credits with no covenant issues. And then 15 is the last slide I'll cover before handing it back to John, is just to look at some of the new income investments that we've made so far in the year to date. And there are fewer here than there are on the equity side of the portfolio, but we've made 6 investments during the year. Actually, 4 of these are made on a secondary basis. And you may have seen in our July monthly presentation that we announced that we had made a $50 million commitment to a credit opportunities program within Neuberger Berman. So this is a program which purchases debt of private equity backed companies in the secondary market, looking to buy at discounts through the network that we have of our professionals and Neuberger Berman as a whole. And this gives the potential for capital appreciation as well as income. So 4 of these investments were bought in, not through that program, but in similar types of strategies. And now we've made this commitment to that program to continue that, as that will give guaranteed deal flow to MBPE through that program. So that's Carestream, Asurion, MedAssets, and Wencore. And then GCA was a primary business that we invested in towards the beginning of the year in janitorial and custodial services in a large deal alongside TH Lee. So that's the new income investment so far in 2016. And now I'll turn it over to John to continue talking about performance and dividends and other strategic initiatives that we have ongoing.
Thanks, Paul. So on page 16, our performance for a period of time and then year to date, of course. So our total return, which includes our dividend performance being paid, included in the calculation. On net asset value year to date, we've appreciated 4.1%, and on share price with total return of the dividends, 3%. If you go on to page 17, Paul talked about the 93% coverage of the cash yield from the income portfolio. You can see that the annualized dividend at this point, the 25 cents semi-annually, is 50 cents a share. And right now, our run rate cash income is 46 cents a share, as Paul indicated, as a result of a number of our different debt positions being paid off. And as we continue to redeploy that, we fully intend to get that back to 100%. If you flip on to page 18, again, our capital position since the outset of MBPE has always been very strong. We've never had any moment in the history of the company where we were in a position where we had to sell assets or, for that matter, curtail investing, because we've consistently had a strong capital position, and that's true today. Our cash of 78.8 that you saw in the summary earlier, plus 80 of undrawn amounts on the credit facility, make up 158.8 million of available cash and credit facility. We have unfunded commitments that are mandatory unfunded commitments that could be called outside of our control of 47.9. So as you can see, we have an excess of capital resources of 110.9 million. So we're in a very strong capital position. Page 19 goes over the NAV and share price development over the last year. And the bar at the top is the NAV per share, including dividends. The second line, the blue one, is the NAV per share of 14.43 as we sit here today. And then the share price is the bottom line, where the share price, you know, in our opinion, has suffered more than it should, and at a discount not reflective of our quality of our portfolio, the efficiency of our fee structure at 1040, or for that matter, the ability of our assets to continually generate cash and require new assets to be invested. You'll see a little bit more on the discount to NAV on page 20. You see, as of July 31st, we traded at a 27.9% discount. As you know, we're a good portion of our assets are credit positions, as Paul just discussed. We have then primarily direct positions in companies, which would be equivalent to the direct equity funds, and then about 20% of our portfolio is private equity fund to funds. If you weighted average those three based on the characteristics of our portfolio, you'd expect a 17.2% weighted average. And so we feel like relative to the market right now, our discount is too wide. Page 21, we go through our value proposition to our investors. We offer capital appreciation from our equity investments. We also offer income, creating a covered dividend through our cash yield from our income portfolio. As I just mentioned, our capital structure remains very, very strong. And we allow access to private equity with a very attractive fee structure. As we only have the single layer fee, as Paul mentioned, we have lower all-in fees than if you invested directly into private equity funds in the marketplace. And then we also wanted to spend a moment talking about our process in raising a new class of ZDPs. Just to go to the bottom bullet point on the page first, we issued our current ZDPs multiple years ago in 2009, and they mature next spring in 2017. We call those the 27 ZDPs. They have a yield at the outset of 7.3%, and currently they trade substantially in excess of their accretive value as the rate of return to maturity is much less than the 7.3%. As you can see in the very bottom of this page, they'll eventually have 52.8 million pounds due at maturity next spring. We have launched the process to raise a new class of ZDPs, going now back sort of toward the top of page 23. On August 24th, we published our prospectus for a new series of ZDPs that will mature in 2022. And we target a closing date for this issuance in mid-September, so just a few weeks from now. The issue size we've targeted is between 25 to 50 million, with a gross redemption yield of between 4 and 4.75%. The final amounts and the gross redemption yield will be determined by way of a book build. That will help align the investor demands and their goals, along with the most cost-efficient financing for the structure. Existing ZDP holders will have the opportunity to roll their existing 2017 ZDPs into the new 2022 ZDPs. Any investor who doesn't participate in that will continue to hold their ZDP until its maturity next May, when they'll be paid off in full. This is just when you have a capital structure that includes ZDPs, we think this is just the normal way of refinancing those ZDPs as they approach their maturity. So the benefits of these ZDPs for NBPE really are just a continuation of our strategy. We think it's an attractive financing option through a non-cash fixed interest rate security at a very competitive interest rate. will give us funds to invest with a reasonably long lead time to 2022 in our ongoing attractive deal flow. And also, it will allow us to maintain our investment level relative to our shareholders at more than 100%. This new ZZP offering, we've planned it out in conjunction with our credit facility to extend out the maturity of the amounts that are on the books for our debt and ZZPs combined. And we made the decision to raise this well in advance of maturity, just again as a cautious approach to the market. We think it's a good time to borrow and or issue the ZDPs, and we thought we'd take advantage of that opportunity. You see a few of the statistics about the old ZDPs and the old credit facility on page 25, focusing really just on the ZDPs. You see the current ones are due, as I said, next May. This will push out the due date till September of 22. The issue size of the original, about 33 million pounds. This would be about 50 million pounds, so really the accreted value roughly of the current ZDPs. The term is 6 years rather than 7.5. You can see, as I mentioned, the gross redemption yield at issuance we believe will be much, much lower than it was previously, and a minimum cover ratio stronger at 2.75x than we had when we originally issued. So we think there'll be good market uptake on this. And in combination with having just refinanced the credit facility, extending its terms out till 2021, will put us in a very strong capital position going forward. And so that is all we had to cover today, and we hope that was helpful, but we're certainly ready for questions and answers, or at least for questions from you, and we'll come up with the answers. So, operator, if you could check for questions online.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Matthew Hose with Jefferies.
Hi there. Is it possible to give an update on Marquee Brands? It doesn't look like we've seen any drawing of the commitment there for around about a year.
So Marquee Brands actually continues to invest and very active with, and I can't obviously be specific as to the things they're pursuing, but continues to be very active talking to numerous brands. Just Monday I had an update with them where they talked about multiple transactions that they are in the process of negotiating in really quite different sorts of brands, very exciting transactions. And the goals, like much of what Marquee does, is to take a strong brand that might be limited geographically in its exposure and spread that exposure with the team they put together to broader markets. And that certainly was the brands that we discussed with them on Monday fit that bill. So I think you should expect to continue or to see more Marquee Brands draws in the near future.
That's great. Thanks.
And again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your next question comes from Frank Bijeveld with IBS Capital Management.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Frank Bijeveld, IBS. You tipped on the three vintage years, 2014, 15, and 16, which comprise 60% of the portfolio. Will this concentrated vintage layer have consequences for the distributions in the coming years, as they are relatively young and will probably take 4 to 5 years at least? That's one of my questions.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, the way we look at this is, you're right, private equity investments can take 4 to 5 years. I would point out that one of the things that we have in our strategy that is differentiated is that we do participate in midlife transactions as well. So a number of our transactions are in investments alongside private equity firms who have been in the transaction for some time before we come in to provide capital, usually to help them do an add-on of some type, or sometimes really just for a recap round. But some of those are in there, so those would be typically expected to have a shorter life. So I think to come back to your question, 2014 investments are reaching a period where you might begin to see some liquidity from those types of investments, either through recapitalizations or in midlife transactions, possibly through exits. But overall, I would agree with the general thesis that kind of a 3 to 5 year hold period for the other transactions is more like our base case. So we would expect to see realizations still continuing from the older portfolio, which comprises 40% of the overall portfolio, and a little bit less from that younger part. But I do think that although you might not see as much liquidity from that part, we are looking to that part of the portfolio to provide gains, interim gains, I would say, as the performance improves and the marks therefore improve alongside those. So I think we'll still see those help us create value in the coming year or 2 years, but I wouldn't be looking to those primarily for liquidity in the coming year or 2 years.
And I would add to that, one of the sources of our consistent liquidity at this point is the runoff of the funds, the historical legacy portfolio. And so I don't think, absent a major market shutdown like maybe we saw into 2008 and early in 2009, that we see our portfolio ceasing to throw off substantial cash.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Ian Schooler with Stifel.
Good morning, Ian.
Hi there. In terms of new investments, I mean, how challenging is it to get investments that give you a high enough yield? I mean, I know your comments on the dividend cover of 0.93, but is that a challenge at the moment in a yield of in a world of declining yields?
So the answer is, we live in the same world of declining yields as the rest of the world. And so we have been, the reason our current level of investment in income investments is lower is we've been very selective and not willing to take lower rates for what we think to be the same risk profile as we previously were getting somewhat higher rates in what we think is a trough in interest rates. So one of our responses to this, as Paul mentioned, has been to look more into the secondary market for private equity-backed credits to fill in our portfolio. And we have a very active desk monitoring that marketplace, target securities that they've identified. The market's not the sort of market that trades every day, and so you have to know those securities you want to pursue, wait for them to have some sort of discount attributable to them and be available in the marketplace, which happens for a whole variety of reasons, and then be prepared to act quickly to purchase those. So the fact we're in this lower yield environment and sometimes a disrupted environment, which creates discounts in certain things that we can buy on the trading market, that the discounts aren't necessarily related to the quality of the underlying company and its performance on its revenues and its EBITDA, et cetera, has led us towards that to give us more deal flow that we can look at to keep the income portfolio at the size we want it to be.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm sure there are no further questions at this time.
Okay, well, on behalf of everybody at Neuberger Berman and Paul and myself in particular, thanks everybody for dialing in. Obviously, at any time, Paul, myself, Peter Von Lee, who was unable to join us this morning, are happy to hear from any of you and speak to you about NBPE and the private equity markets. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for participating in today's conference. You may now disconnect.